Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I know I've been on a bit of an economics kick lately, and honestly, I think it's absolutely critical to understand the foundations of Austrian economics, because the underlying system and characteristics of Bitcoin are designed around those economic principles and understanding. So I think they're very critical to understanding why Bitcoin is likely to succeed. And that's not to mention that it's one of the key reasons I saw incredibly high value in Bitcoin very early on when everybody thought I was an absolute fool. It was because of my brother and I were very deep into trying to figure out what we thought of as what was the economic reality, and we were just discovering Austrian economics at the time, and it was such a profound shift from the economic thought that we had been arguing about essentially for years up until that point as we continued to kind of explore the concepts. And when we found Bitcoin, so many of those elements were suddenly coming together. So we kind of hit this sweet spot of technology and economics at the time. And I think it was absolutely fundamental to my understanding of why Bitcoin was valuable and why, when everybody just thought it was magical internet points that were a complete joke, we saw a veritable revolution both in the technology and in the economics of money that was both intuitive and like a natural, seemed like a natural progression, and whose impact on the global system, on the global economy and liberty, literally cannot be understated. So because of that, I want you guys to understand as well. And I know probably a lot of y'all are very familiar with Austrian economics, or at least I assume so. But there was one piece that I read very early on, and I keep coming back to because it's just an utter classic, and it does such a good job of laying out the incredible complexity of a market economy, to the point that it is truly impossible to imagine in any real sense. And at the same time, it suggests the incredible folly of and arrogance of thinking that you can centrally manage an economy with a boardroom full of quote-unquote experts. And it was a foundational piece of my understanding and exploration of Austrian economics at the time, so I wanted to share it with you guys. If you haven't heard it, I think you'll really like this one. It's really incredible. It's really an incredible piece. If you have heard it, I'm sure you wouldn't mind hearing it again, as I have always gotten a refresher every couple of years on this one. And this is, of course, I, Pencil by Leonard E. Reed. I am a lead pencil, the ordinary wooden pencil familiar to all boys and girls and adults who can read and write. Writing is both my vocation and my avocation. That's all I do. You may wonder why I should write a genealogy. Well, to begin with, my story is interesting. And next, I am a mystery. More so than a tree or a sunset or even a flash of lightning. But sadly, I am taken for granted by those who use me, as if I were a mere incident and without background. This supercilious attitude relegates me to the level of the commonplace. This is a species of the grievous error in which mankind cannot too long persist without peril. For the wise G.K. Chesterton observed, quote, "We are perishing for want of wonder, not for want of wonders," end quote. I, Pencil, simple though I appear to be, merit your wonder and awe, a claim I shall attempt to prove. In fact, if you can understand me, no, that's too much to ask of anyone. If you can become aware of the miraculousness which I symbolize, you can help save the freedom mankind is so unhappily losing. I have a profound lesson to teach, and I can teach this lesson better than can an automobile or an airplane or a mechanical dishwasher because, well, because I am seemingly so simple. Simple? Yet not a single person on the face of this earth knows how to make me. This sounds fantastic, doesn't it? Especially when it is realized that there are about 1.5 billion of my kind produced in the USA each year. Pick me up, look me over. What do you see? Not much meets the eye. There's some wood, lacquer, the printed labeling, graphite lead, a bit of metal, and an eraser. Innumerable antecedents. Just as you cannot trace your family tree back very far, so it is impossible for me to name and explain all of my antecedents. But I would like to suggest enough of them to impress upon you the richness and complexity of my background. My family tree begins with what in fact is a tree. A cedar of straight grain that grows in Northern California and Oregon. Now contemplate all the saws and trucks and rope and the countless other gear used in the harvesting and carting the cedar logs to the railroad siding. Think of all the persons and numberless skills that went into their fabrication. The mining of ore, the making of steel and its refinement into saws, axes, motors, the growing of hemp and bringing it through all the stages to heavy and strong rope, the logging camps with their beds and mess halls, the cookery and the raising of all the foods. Why, untold thousands of persons had a hand in every cup of coffee the loggers drink. The logs are shipped to a mill in San Leandro, California. Can you imagine the individuals who make flat cars and rails and railroad engines and who construct and install the communication systems incidental thereto? These legions are among my antecedents. Consider the mill work in San Leandro. The cedar logs are cut into small pencil-length slats less than 1/4 of an inch in thickness. These are kiln-dried and then tinted for the same reason women put rouge on their faces. People prefer that I look pretty, not a pallid white. The slats are waxed and kiln-dried again. How many skills went in the making of the tent and the kilns, into supplying the heat, the light, and the power, the belts, motors, and all the other things a mill requires? Sweepers in the mill among my ancestors? Yes, and included are the men who poured the concrete for the dam of Pacific Gas and Electric Company hydroplant, which supplies the mill's power. Don't overlook the ancestors present and distant who have had a hand in transporting 60 carloads of slats across the nation. Once in the pencil factory, $4 million in machinery and building, all capital accumulated by thrifty and saving parents of mine, each slat is given 8 grooves by a complex machine, after which another machine lays lead in every other slat, applies glue, and places another slat atop. A lead sandwich, so to speak. 7 brothers and I are mechanically carved from this wood-clinched sandwich. My lead itself, well, it contains no lead at all, is complex. The graphite is mined in Ceylon, Sri Lanka. Consider these miners and those who make their mini tools and the makers of the paper sacks in which the graphite is shipped and those who make the string that ties the sacks and those who put them aboard ships and those who make the ships. Even the lighthouse keepers along the way assisted in my birth, and the harbor pilots. The graphite is mixed with clay from Mississippi in which ammonium hydroxide is used in the refining process. Then wetting agents are added, such as sulfonated tallow, animal fats chemically reacted with sulfuric acid. After passing through numerous machines, the mixture finally appears as endless extrusions, as from a sausage grinder, cut to size, dried, and baked for several hours at 1850 degrees Fahrenheit. To increase their strength and smoothness, the leads are then treated with a hot mixture which includes candelilla wax from Mexico, paraffin wax, and hydrogenated natural fats. My cedar receives 6 coats of lacquer. Do you know all the ingredients of lacquer? Who would think that the growers of castor beans and the refiners of castor oil are a part of it? They are. Why, even the processes by which the lacquer is made a beautiful yellow involve the skills of more persons than one can enumerate. Observe the labeling. That's a film formed by applying heat to carbon black mixed with resins. How do you make resins, and what, pray, is carbon black? My bit of metal, the ferrule, is brass. Think of all the persons who mine zinc and copper, and those who have the skills to make shiny sheet brass from these products of nature. Those black rings on my ferrule are black nickel. What is black nickel, and how is it applied? The complete story of why the center of my ferrule has no black nickel on it would take pages to explain. Then there's my crowning glory, inelegantly referred to in the trade as the plug. The part man uses to erase the errors he makes with me. An ingredient called factus is what does the erasing. It is a rubber-like product made by reacting rapeseed oil from the Dutch East Indies in Indonesia with sulfur chloride. Rubber, contrary to the common notion, is only for binding purposes. Then, too, there are numerous vulcanizing and accelerating agents. The pumice comes from Italy, and the pigment which gives the plug its color is cadmium sulfide. No one knows. Does anyone wish to challenge my earlier assertion that no single person on the face of this earth knows how to make me? Actually, millions of human beings have had a hand in my creation, no one of whom even knows more than a very few of the others. Now, you may say that I go too far in relating the picker of a coffee berry in far-off Brazil and food growers elsewhere to my creation, that this is an extreme position. I shall stand by my claim. There isn't a single person in all these millions, including the president of the pencil company, who contributes more than a tiny, infinitesimal bit of know-how. From the standpoint of know-how, the only difference between the miner of graphite in Ceylon and the logger in Oregon is in the type of know-how. Neither the miner nor the logger can be dispensed with, any more than can the chemist at the factory or the worker in the oil field, paraffin being a byproduct of petroleum. Here is an astounding fact. Neither the worker in the oil field, nor the chemist, nor the digger of graphite or clay, nor any who mans or makes the ships or trains or trucks, nor the one who runs the machine that does the knurling and the bit of metal, nor the president of the company performs his singular task because he wants me. Each one wants me less, perhaps, than does a child in the first grade. Indeed, there are some among this vast multitude who never saw a pencil, nor would they know how to use one. Their motivation is other than me. Perhaps it is something like this. Each of these millions sees that he can thus exchange his tiny know-how for the goods and services he needs or wants. I may or may not be among these items. No mastermind. There is a fact still more astounding. The absence of a mastermind, of anyone dictating or forcibly directing these countless actions which bring me into being. No trace of such a person can be found. Instead, we find the invisible hand at work. This is the mystery to which I earlier referred. It has been said that only God can make a tree. Why do we agree with this? Isn't it because we realize that we ourselves could not make one? Indeed, can we even describe a tree? We cannot, except in superficial terms. We can say, for instance, that a certain molecular configuration manifests itself as a tree, But what mind is there among men that could even record, let alone direct, the constant changes in molecules that transpire in the lifespan of a tree? Such a feat is utterly unthinkable. I, Pencil, am a complex combination of miracles. A tree, zinc, copper, graphite, and so on. But to these miracles which manifest themselves in nature, an even more extraordinary miracle has been added. The configuration of creative human energies. Millions of tiny know-hows configurating naturally and spontaneously in response to human necessity and desire and in the absence of any human masterminding. Since only God can make a tree, I insist that only God could make me. Man can no more direct these millions of know-hows to bring me into being than he can put molecules together to create a tree. The above is what I meant when writing, if you can become aware of the miraculousness which I symbolize, you can help save the freedom mankind is so unhappily losing. For if one is aware that these know-hows will naturally, yes, automatically, arrange themselves into creative and productive patterns in response to human necessity and demand, that is, in the absence of governmental or any other coercive masterminding, then one will possess an absolutely essential ingredient for freedom, a faith in free people. Freedom is impossible without this faith. Once government has had a monopoly of a creative activity such, for instance, as the delivery of the mails, most individuals will believe that the mails could not be efficiently delivered by men acting freely. And here is the reason. Each one acknowledges that he himself doesn't know how to do all the things incident to mail delivery. He also recognizes that no other individual could do it. These assumptions are correct. No individual possesses enough know-how to perform a nation's mail delivery any more than any individual possesses enough know-how to make a pencil. Now, in the absence of faith in free people, in the unawareness that millions of tiny know-hows would naturally and miraculously form and cooperate to satisfy this necessity, the individual cannot help but reach the erroneous conclusion that mail can be delivered only by governmental masterminding. Testimony galore. If I, Pencil, were the only item that could offer testimony on what men and women can accomplish when free to try, then those with little faith would have a fair case. However, there is testimony galore. It is all about us and on every hand. Mail delivery is exceedingly simple when compared, for instance, to the making of an automobile, or a calculating machine, or a grain combine, or a milling machine, or to tens of thousands of other things. Delivery? Why, in this area where men have been left free to try, they deliver the human voice around the world in less than 1 second. They deliver an event visually and in motion to any person's home when it is happening. They deliver 150 passengers from Seattle to Baltimore in less than 4 hours. They deliver gas from Texas to one's range or furnace in New York at unbelievably low rates and without subsidy. They deliver each 4 pounds of oil from the Persian Gulf to our eastern seaboard, halfway around the world, for less money than the government charges for delivering a 1 ounce letter across the street. The lesson I have to teach is this: leave all creative energies uninhibited. Merely organize society to act in harmony with this lesson. Let society's legal apparatus remove all obstacles the best it can. Permit these creative know-hows freely to flow. Have faith that free men and women will respond to the invisible hand. This faith will be confirmed. I, Pencil, seemingly simple though I am, offer the miracle of my creation as testimony that this is a practical faith, as practical as the sun, the rain, a cedar tree, or the good earth. There is also an afterword by Milton Friedman and a pretty lengthy introduction. I'm actually reading this one off fee.org. That's the Foundation for Economic Education. They have a really great website. I usually use them for updates on economic news and a kind of a contrarian perspective to the mainstream media, typically, though, of course, they don't hit all the topics, and that's kind of the point. I think most of what the mainstream media covers is just nonsense. But I hope this begins to illustrate, and, you know, it might not have convinced anybody yet who's either on the fence or still introducing themselves to Austrian theory and a more thorough and nuanced vision or idea of the market and what an economy actually means. But this one in particular for me kind of hit me at the right spot and really made me look at and contemplate all the different facets that go into making even simple things and how many times, I mean, and this is what kind of took me down the road of trying to understand what a price was, because we have such a simplistic and politically elementary view of what a price is. Like, people just think that these things are just dictated by some business somewhere. Some evil CEO is just determining what the price of a pencil is. And it's just, it just flies in the face of the literally millions of antecedents that come before that all have their own individual price that help price the labor, the time, the materials, and everything that go into this. And then this pencil at the end of it is offered in a pack of 10 for 50 cent to this day. So it's just an utterly fascinating concept. And I think there are too many people who are incredibly ungrateful and just never even stop and think about how fascinating and what an extraordinary cooperation the market economy actually is. The number of people who don't care, like, I mean, how many people of an opposing religious view or political view or some race or cultural divide or language barrier went into the making of the microphone that I am reading into? No doubt this thing's probably made in China. I can't speak Chinese. How on earth and have I been able to trade efficiently and for a very reasonable price this machine to make this podcast happen with somebody who speaks a language I don't know the first thing about? With probably tens of thousands, millions of people that speak that language, all who had a hand in some way in making this available to me, which I just went on my computer and ordered offline in a matter of like 15 or 20 minutes. So it just, and it was on my doorstep like 3 days later, free shipping. So I hope that rang true for some of you, and if you've not been introduced to these ideas, I hope it kind of had an impact, or at least made you think about these concepts a little bit, because I don't think we can have a realistic and true assessment of Bitcoin and these technologies and the incredible power of these new consensus mechanisms and the ability to reach agreement between people in a natural way without having a real foundation of economic understanding. So I think this stuff is really important, and I hope you guys don't think this is preachy or anything like that, because it just, honestly, it just fascinates me, and that's part of what I wanted this podcast to be about, is everything that just fascinates me and that I find beautiful and world-changing that I just wanted to share. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Don't forget to check out fee.org. That's FEE for the Freedom of Economic Education. org. And if you've never read any other work by Leonard E. Reed, he has passed. Obviously, this was written a very long time ago. You can tell with the language. I'm not even sure. This was probably 60, 70 years old. Oh, first published in 1958. There it is. So if you have never read anything by Leonard E. Reed, I encourage you to dig a little deeper. He has some very profound stuff and really interesting insights. With that, don't forget to subscribe to the Crypto Economy Podcast, and we will be back to more crypto-centered stuff later on. Let me know if you enjoy these discussions about economics. We will obviously continue to hit these, probably just by major points as they kind of come up and are relevant. I also just want to make a note, if you have not seen yet, there was some news out today that ICE, the parent company of the NASDAQ stock exchange, the NYSE, not NASDAQ, partnered with Microsoft and Starbucks to form they're trying to form like a cryptocurrency exchange and platform. And Starbucks is actually, it's at least I don't think it's live yet. I don't see any suggestion that there is. I've read like three or four different things, and it's very, very low on details. Starbucks is going to be accepting cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and apparently a few others for payment in their store. So that's really exciting and just a news point that I wanted to hit just because it came out today. We're going to close this one out. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Twitter and Medium. And if you would like to support this show to help keep all this stuff running, I've got a lot of things in the work, and I really hope you guys like it. I want to make as much content out there available for people who just don't have the time to sit down and read it all, because there is such great stuff that is just inaccessible. And I want to be a bridge for that purpose. If you would like to support this show, I will have, as always, my Bitcoin address available and my affiliate link to the Trezor hardware wallet. So if you want to buy a Trezor hardware wallet to secure your Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, I highly recommend the product. It's a wonderful tool, and you can get it with no extra cost through my affiliate link, and it will send a couple of bucks to help out the show. So thank you guys so much. As always, keep listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Have a wonderful weekend, and until then, take it easy, guys.